Have you noticed that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on? That regardless of who wins elections, lawmakers cannot pass whatever legislation they like. They find themselves bound by what is popular, or at least their sense of it. They can only act within a narrow set of ideas, and that range is called the Overton Window. And on the Overton Window podcast, we look at issues around the country and talk to the people who change what is politically possible. Now, some fights are long and against hard odds. Now, industry protections have been written into law, and they are strong. And so there are hoops to jump through to become an interior director, a decorator, a private investigator, or a whole host of other occupations. Often, these are put in place with no gains to the public. And so the Institute for Justice has been working to fix these occupational licensing rules for decades now. And today we are joined by Lee McGrath. He is a retired director of legislation and senior legal counsel at the Institute for Justice. And Megan Forbes, who is the current director of legislation and senior legislative counsel for the Institute for Justice. Lee and Megan, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
James, it's always fun to be with our friends at the Mackinac Institute.
Thank you. So, Lee, how did you get into this fight?
I got into this fight by tripping over Morris Kleiner. When I opened the Minnesota office of the Institute for Justice in 2004, I didn't realize that in my backyard was the world's leading scholar on occupational licensing, Morris Kleiner, who is at the Humphrey School at the University of Minnesota. So Morris introduced and put some flesh on the bone about what occupational licensing really, really is and how big it is. So that's my introduction. And I think to a large extent, it stimulated IJ's introduction to occupational licensing.
So just a happenstance?
In part, in that IJ had done a number of braiding cases. But when we were looking for research that complemented or supported or even changed our instinct about how counterproductive regulations can be, we found Morris.
Mm-hmm. That's very fortuitous. But I think that's also an interesting thing of, like, you started to engage in this thing and it attracted people to you who had done the hard academic work on the subject, who can tell you more about the problems of occupational licensing. Megan, has that been useful to your work today?
It has been, yes. And also the Institute for Justice's research that we've done now, studying the barriers that exist for lower and middle income occupations. It allows us to take the research that we have and bring it to policymakers and show that there is a problem, and show that there are states that don't have these barriers that exist, and make a compelling case to change them and list them.
It's not just whether occupational licensing rules exist or not, but what are the terms that you have to go through? And so there is a suite of options for a legislator interested in this subject to rationalize it, to ensure that there are public benefits from occupational licensing rules. So Megan, tell me, what are these debates like now? Like, how do you get legislators who are interested, and what are they doing?
We do get legislators who are interested. We also see legislators still proposing very bad licenses. Just yesterday in New Jersey, the Senate considered a proposal for a dog trainer license, but thankfully stalled amid overwhelming opposition. But what we're seeing now is just more of an openness to wanting to make it easier for people to work. We're also seeing that there are labor shortages, obviously. A lot of businesses are trying to find workers and licensing requirements are standing in the way. And we're seeing people from within certain industries wanting to come forward and work toward change because they view licensing as much more problematic than they may have in the past. I also think as technology has evolved, we're seeing more of an openness now. So at IJ, we are focusing where through our research, we see those most burdensome licenses, and most often that's in cosmetology and barbering and the trades. So that's where our advocacy has been focused. And then, you know, occasionally there are other occupations that arise, but we're looking to try to have the greatest impact with reducing the most burdensome licenses that exist for lower and middle income workers.
That's an interesting strategy too, because it accounts for some boldness, because it's not like every state, as far as I know, does cosmetology. Every state does some of these ones. They affect a lot of people. And there are just some licenses that are out there that affect so few people that you'd say, this is the weak guy. Let's get a victory on reptile handlers in California or something like that. But no, you went for the hard ones.
And just to add to what can be difficult about licensing reform generally is that there are so many licenses. Just when you look at the breadth of licensing, and you may get a policymaker who's interested in one specific area, but the problem's widespread. So we do have process-based legislation that we work on with lawmakers too, to try to create processes like sunrise and sunset review processes to try to prevent new licenses from being enacted in the first place, and to try to review licenses to make sure that there is empirical evidence to support the health or safety reason for the license.
But first guest of this episode is the Nebraska legislator who sponsored that bill.
Yes, yes. So that's a great step in the right direction. But it, you know, it can be challenging to get policymakers interested in tackling all these different licenses. So it is helpful to show that a lot of people are affected by a particular license when you're working on this issue.
Lee, can you help me out with something? Could you lay out where you think the bounds of the Overton window are on this issue? Because it's clear that, as you said, getting new occupational licenses is clearly politically feasible. Even licensing dog trainers in New Jersey, while it didn't happen, seemed to be like on the bounds of the Overton window. On the other side, like, good comprehensive review processes seems to be politically feasible. It's just a matter of where the legislative interests are going. Like, can you help me lay this out?
It's the right questions. Although Megan and my former colleagues would love to take on the licensing of doctors, it is just completely outside of the Overton window. I mean, it's an odd thing, because your proctologist and your podiatrist and your pulmonologist all have the same license. So it's not a very effective means of telling consumers who's good at their specialty. But that's completely outside of the window. So the focus that Megan and her team are taking is very much focused on that very Overton idea of common sense. Classically, I see politicians, after years and years and years of dealing with an issue, waking up one day and in a very Overton way saying, oh, that's just common sense. That's the signal of acceptance.
By the way, I also like that they will say the exact same thing about expanding the occupational licenses. It's just common sense that we license this profession. And then for the opposite, it's just common sense that we liberalize the rules around this occupation.
Well said. No, one of the challenges is that certain legislators like occupational licensing. They equate it to education and training, instead of thinking it as a barrier, an excessive barrier into a labor market. So step one is to try to cast a skeptical light on the institution of occupational licensing. Step two is the Sunrise Act, and step three is the Sunset Act. Step two is vitally important in Sunrise because you just have to stop these things before they become institutionalized. And interestingly, this is not necessarily a political party issue in that the state of Vermont, the state of Utah, are very good at stopping new occupational licenses. So it is very much a cultural idea as to what are the traditions in the legislature, in the state government, of stopping new occupational licenses.
Mm-hmm.
Megan, what would you add to that?
Yeah,
I think just to add to what Lee is saying related to the culture of the legislature, I think, you know, when you think about where there may be common ground, I think looking at data and, you know, being able to make the case through empirical evidence of whether a license is needed, even through the independent government Sunrise reviews from different states now, we're able to share reports from government entities in different states saying that a license isn't needed when they've considered proposals for new licenses. All this information comes together and it helps support the idea of common sense, like Lee was saying, and really make the case that this isn't necessary or this license needs to be repealed or pared back. It's too burdensome for this occupation or for the health or safety risk that may be present. So I think having data and research and all of the research that's been done now has been incredibly helpful and has helped make this issue make more sense to policymakers.
Okay, the very interesting. Let me try and summarize some of what we've gotten so far, which is sentiment really matters. Like legislators' knee-jerk reaction of which side makes more sense. That's driven by a lot of what they're hearing. It's driven by kind of their own experience. A lot of times, it's an interest group comes in and asks them, you know, hey, do you want to sponsor this occupational licensing role? If the dog trainers come to a legislator and said, hey, we think we should be licensed, would you introduce this? Some legislators may say yes, and others may say no. Like, it makes more sense to review the licensing rules that we've got.
I think you've nailed it. But one of the things Megan and I and our colleagues find is that the more knowledgeable the experience the legislator is, and even sometimes the agency. For example, in Michigan, LARA has some really talented people who understand the limits and the costs of licensing. And to a large extent, that knowledge among legislators, knowledge among agency people, overcomes the knee-jerk support for credentialing and for regulation. And so it really is trying to seed the research, seed the good arguments into an environment in which legislators just jump to doing something to protect anything to protect their perception of risk to public health and safety.
Yeah. And just for our listeners, LARA is the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs, who administers the state's occupational licensing rules. As you mentioned already, it's not necessarily a partisan issue. People in Vermont are skeptical. People in Utah are skeptical. Megan, what are you guys doing to change the sentiments that legislators have about occupational licensing rules?
We are putting people front and center. We are going out into the world and talking with people who are impacted by licensing requirements, getting people interested in becoming involved in the legislative process. In the past, it's been special interest groups that have come to the legislature to get these occupations licensed. And we're combating that by bringing real people who are impacted by licenses, who see the problems and want to reach out to their legislators and make a difference. And I think that that's that's helpful. I think it's helpful for legislators to see the person who is impacted by the licensing requirement and how an overly burdensome license or an unnecessary license impacts a person's life and livelihood. So that's where our focus has been, a lot of organizing. You know, we'll hear from people because they're familiar with our work and they want us to help when they encounter a problem in their state, and working through people who are impacted to help empower them to go to the legislature and make a change.
I mean, what you guys are doing is incredibly important. I mean, you're doing what needs to be done to sell this issue. You've done objective and interesting research about the costs and the problems. You tell stories of the people who are hurt by these rules. You've got heroes, you've got villains, you're hitting people on the things that they care about, and you've got lawsuits that are trying to find a judicial path to victory on this issue. I mean, outside, I mean, you're also doing political work, you're holding legislators' hands, you're doing good communications work. I mean, and you're finding opportunities to make changes for the better wherever you can find them. I mean, this is the hard work of persuasion, and you guys are doing it better than anyone. So,
that's very kind. But the Mackinac Institute has been in this fight. How many times has Jared Skorup gone up to Lansing and complained about the licensing of painters, something near and dear to his heart, but is still happening in Detroit? So it's an effort that's happening at Mackinac, at the Buck, dare I say something nice about the Buckeye Institute and Ohioans in general, but they just had a superb bill that came out of their Sunset Review Committee. And then in Nebraska, the Platt Institute is playing a vital role. Laura Epke, a former state senator, is on the forefront of changing occupational licenses in that state. But Megan, I've left out some of our other friends at SPN. So who are you working with?
There's so many. The Pelican Institute, for example, I know they're doing great work. But yes, there's so many groups that are out there that are a part of this fight, you know, on the right and on the left. It's really great to see that there is bipartisan interest in reform and a push to try to make things better.
Yes. Yeah, I don't want to imply that it's just you and you alone. If that were the case, I don't think there would be as much success as you've seen on this issue. There are interested parties. There are a lot of people who have their own role to play in this fight. And sometimes our role is just connecting you guys who have done a lot of the hard work with some lawmakers who might be interested, and just to see how far we can go. We still have a lot of progress to be made. As I'm sure you know, like, this is often a frustrating fight because the solution seems so obvious and so clear to us. The villains seem so obvious and clear. I mean, villains is a bit much. These are just people trying to do the best. But it's kind of frustrating when they're like, we've got a great solution. Here's some ways you can make this work for you, lawmaker X. Just pick it up and run with it. And then oftentimes there's just no interest at all. How do you deal with that?
James, you've identified a real issue. I think for people like us in the movement, we read the research, we see the personalized human costs of this. We internalize it, and we do our own Overton analysis to accept it ourselves as something that not only is popular, but it is something that it is imperative that it be done. Well, we have to remember that we've internalized a whole lot of stuff that state legislators have yet to internalize. I think that the good news is that momentum is on our side, and that we are well inside what is popular and inside the window. But you're right, on a case by case basis, on a bill by bill basis, there is still work to be done.
All right. So you've mentioned that you've got three steps of your process of let's get some control on these things. Let's review or let's make it harder to pass new legislation. Let's try and sunset the rules that exist. Where are states right now? Megan, can you help me out with that?
They're all over the place. We are seeing interest and momentum with cosmetology licensing, for example. There are about 20 bills that we're involved with right now across the country, all with beauty and barbering professionals backing them and supporting them. Of course, there's opposition to them too. But we are seeing a real interest in reform and, trying to find the right fit for occupations that have historically faced very high and burdensome licensing requirements when they may not pose, a health or safety risk that is comparable to some far less regulated occupations. We're also seeing interest in process-based bills, too. Now more than half of states have universal license recognition. We've seen an interest in trying to address some of the symptoms of licensing that create, headaches for people when they're trying to move or change careers. And then continuing to talk about taking that evidence-based approach with review bills. So we're seeing interest. We're also seeing, like I said earlier, bad bills that continue to be introduced. We're seeing situations where we have the data, we've had the lawsuit, we have people who want to change the law and still nothing happens. And it's incredibly frustrating. So we're working on all these different angles, but it's really hard to say where we think there's progress and we're seeing progress, but we still have obstacles that we face, every day with this work.
All right, so...
In which we find new friends, and which Megan and others across the country have been tremendously influential and successful, is trying to get people back into work who have a criminal record.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so intuitive that even those who like regulation, those who like credentialing, recognize that the best post-conviction policy is work and stopping the second and third penalties of the collateral consequences of a criminal record has tremendous momentum.
Yeah.
And then we're do you have any bills this year?
I would say there are at least 10 bills right now across the country addressing that issue. Limiting what can be considered disqualifying by a licensing board, making sure that old and irrelevant convictions that don't directly relate to the person's ability to work in the occupation are not being considered and used to disqualify them, or arbitrary character standards like good moral character that really depends on who's applying them. We all have different views of what that means, making sure those standards aren't used to disqualify people. And then giving people a predetermination process where before investing time and resources into getting a license, they're able to get that decision from a licensing board about their criminal history and whether that would disqualify them, applying better standards that are more targeted at whether the crime directly relates to their ability to safely work in the occupation. So we're seeing all of those different policies getting enacted. They've been enacted already in many states, and we're seeing states, with so many people having criminal records, wanting to really try to refine their laws to make sure that a criminal record isn't an absolute bar to working in licensed occupations.
So, Lee, you remember what the battle was like in 2004. How do you feel about where the battle is today?
Terrific improvement ends in that we have tremendous resources, not only the research that's being done by IJ but and SPN members, but Ed Timmons has set up at West Virginia University a terrific center, the Knee Regulatory Research Center. And he and his colleagues there are doing great work. So we have a body of peer-reviewed research and the sort of applied research that Mackinaw is writing about, that IJ is doing. That's the forms a solid foundation. And then secondly, we're not kooky anymore. We are inside the window. We're debating inside the window against competing ideas. And I feel good that we're winning inside the window on the entry level first tier types of occupational licenses. And that is supported by the fact that there are shortages in those fields. So you don't have to love me all that much to pass the bill. All you have to do is look around and see that there are tremendous shortages in the trades, as well as in other fields that Megan and others are focusing on.
So, Megan, how do you feel about this issue going forward? Saying got some progress on the low-hanging fruit. What about the tougher stuff?
I'm optimistic. You know, I'll be happy if state legislators are considering evidence with every decision they make about regulation. I think there's a lot more work to be done, too. But overall, I think through our years of working on this issue and collaborating with so many different organizations and people, we've learned a lot, and we're applying those lessons moving forward to be more effective and continue to improve our advocacy and speak to legislators in a way where they truly can understand this issue and make the case for reform.
Lee, thank you for helping us understand the progress made on this issue. And Megan, good luck on your attempts to shift to your searching window.
If I could.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to invite your colleagues in Mackinaw and other policy people to look at what's happening in the Sunset Reviews. Megan and I have always been skeptical that legislators are not willing to work that hard to do meaningful sunset reviews. But last session in Ohio, this session in Oklahoma, we're seeing a Doge-like interest in reducing this type of licensing regulations. And it parallels what's happening on the federal government. It parallels the type of work that litigators are doing at the Pacific Legal Foundation against the administrative state and other litigation arms at SPNs. So there may be some new life in sunset reviews. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage those interested in the field to talk to our friends at the Buckeye Institute, talk to Senator Rogner and others to see what was the magic that got over 30 regulations repealed or reduced in Columbus last year.
Well, so let me dwell on this because what you brought up is very interesting, which is one of the things that you want is a sunset review of saying, look, let's take a reasonable look at all of the occupational licensing rules that we've gotten. What can we do to improve them, improve public benefits, and decrease the costs? And when legislators pass this, they're lazy, and doing anything about them is hard, so they don't. And we're saying that this is now change, and it's changed not necessarily because of anything you've done. You've wanted them to do the hard work in this commission, set up a good process to come out with something. But if there's a political incentive not to do anything, it's not. But that has changed because of sentiments have changed among some lawmakers, at least, which is there's looking at this as a way to be a political asset to do some, or they're saying that DOGE or whoever whatever has changed to make this type of process serve a political benefit. And because of that change in sentiment, which you probably had nothing to do with, you're getting some better outcomes.
I think that speaks to culture and how important that is. It is nice to see some sunset reviews being taken seriously now. My hope is we'll see more in the future.
Excellent. Excellent. And good luck to all of you. That's a really important point for all the listeners, is that despite all the good work that they're doing, there are things outside of policy that change the bounds of the Overton window. And we can only try and take best advantage of those change in sentiments when they happen.
Well said, James.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.